From Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Barbara Leeming is my guest, one of our greatest biographers. Barbara Leeming is perhaps best known for her biography of Orson Welles, and she's also the author of the brilliant If This Was Happiness, a biography of Rita Hayworth, as well as books about Marilyn Monroe, Katharine Hepburn, Betty Davis, Winston Churchill, and Roman Polanski. Barbara Leeming has also written extensively about the Kennedys, including 2015's Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, The Untold Story. Her new book looks at Kathleen Kennedy, and it's called Kick Kennedy, The Charmed Life and Tragic Death of the Favorite Kennedy Daughter. Barbara Leeming, welcome back to From the Bookshelf.
Hi, Gary. It's wonderful to be back.
Thank you. Your new book, Kick Kennedy, is really an intersection of so many of the things that you've written about. Is this a story you've been planning to tell for a while?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right, because, I mean, first of all, I think most people don't know who Kick is. I mean, she was President Kennedy's favorite sister, and the reason you don't know about her is that she died in a plane crash when she was only 28 years old. But this book really began more than 15 years ago, I guess, when I was researching a biography of President Kennedy. And one of the really strange things that happened to me when I was doing the research in England for the Kennedy book, because the president was deeply, deeply, deeply influenced by both the history and the culture of England from the time of his earliest childhood, and especially all of his life, by Winston Churchill and the policies of Churchill and the thinking of Churchill. I mean, to understand Kennedy, you have to do that. So I went to England to work, and I kept hearing about, in addition to Jack, I kept hearing about Kick, and it began over time to become something that I thought that I really should do, because one of the things that was fascinating for me was, as I began to realize how much like Jack Kick was, she was not just his favorite sister, but one of their friends said they were like psychological twins. And I think what they meant by that was that Kick was wildly ambitious. Like Jack, she wanted to be a person of influence. She wanted power. But within the Kennedy family, for both of them, that's a complicated issue, because old Joe Kennedy had taught their kids that they were supposed to think of themselves as a unit, you know, as Kennedys, rather than as individuals. And for Jack's ego, it was possible for him to satisfy that within the family, because he staged this enormous battle with his brother Joe, who was the anointed in the family, the one who was supposed to be president, and Jack was supposed to be the screwed up younger brother who probably might not even live. And one of the things that was important for Jack was to become the top Kennedy, and he managed to do that and did it before his brother was killed during the war. So Jack was okay, but for Kick, even though she was the favorite child, I think she was a girl. And in that family, you were never going to become the top Kennedy if you were a girl. And you've got this fiery ambition. How do you find out who you are in your own right, apart from the family? And you have to find something big to counter that family push. And Kick found that, strangely enough, at the age of 18, when her father was made U.S. ambassador to the court of St. James in London, Kick went with him. And in the British aristocracy, of all places, Kick Kennedy suddenly saw her opening. And this was where she was going to go for power. And what, of course, happens as a result is the story that I'm telling in this book is the story of what happened to her in England. And it's obviously not the typical Kennedy story, because instead, strangely enough, this granddaughter of a Boston saloon keeper is the person who takes you inside a whole other world, the world of the most closed part of the British aristocracy. And at a moment when that world was in tumultuous change. So it's also, strangely enough, an important piece of history. So I've been working on it a very long time, but it's been an extraordinary adventure doing it.
Well, your book sort of begins when Kick Kennedy is 18, but tell us a little bit about before then. What was she like as a child?
I think the thing that's important for us to remember about Kick as a child is not only was she the favorite and the adored daughter, but she assumed a role that was very interesting in relationship to her mother, because Rose Kennedy was somebody who lived in a very, very difficult position. I mean, she had a husband who was an incredible philanderer, and not only an incredible philanderer, but a very indiscreet one. And I remember somebody saying something that to me became really the key to Kick as a very, very young person. I mean, this is way before she's in England. One day, this friend of theirs was describing to me being at lunch in Hyannisport, and all of the kids were seated around the table, and Rose was there, and Joe arrived with his mistress, the mistress of the moment, and sat down at the table. And the boys, that didn't bother them at all. They didn't say a thing. But it was this little girl who stood up and defied her father and said, you know, Daddy, that doesn't go. You can't do this with Mommy. This is really wrong. And I think Kick understood. I mean, one of the things, the cliches that you sort of think about religion and the Kennedys is it has a great deal to do with the psychological dynamics of that family. I mean, I think in the case of Rose Kennedy, religion, I mean, obviously it's real. She's obviously a sincere Catholic, but it was the way that she survived. And I think this little girl sensed that. She understood that if her mother's religion wasn't there, she wouldn't be able to deal with life. And as a result, I think there's a complicated underside to this ambitious little girl, a very sweet side and very, very appealing side. And I think that by the time that she got to England, two things were in play. One, she was the one who, when the boys would laugh at her mother, she'd protect her. So she was her mother's protector, but she was also somebody who had gotten very used to her father being able to give her anything and doing his best to give her anything. Anything that went wrong in Kick's life, her father could fix. Anything she wanted, he would fix. And so she saw this sort of all-powerful father and this very a defenseless mother in many ways. So it's a complicated person who arrives in London in 1938 on the edge of war. And of course, it's a very strange moment for the Kennedys, because it's the last person you expect to be appointed as American ambassador. I mean, a Roman Catholic to the court of St. James, no. But when Joe Kennedy arrived at first, and one of the things that I guess I should also say very early on is that this is a story that I could not have written. If I had started it 5 years ago, it wouldn't have been possible, because I had all of the key surviving players in the story, and you need them in order to tell this story. You had to have somebody who were there watching what happened to Joe Kennedy and Rose Kennedy and Kick and to Jack and all of the kids as it was going on, and who'd been thinking about this for years afterwards. And those people, I mean, the British aristocrats into whose life Kick came see themselves as kind of trustees of history. So for a historian or biographer going to talk to them, they take this all very seriously, and I've never had any more help in my life than I have, you know, doing this kind of work with them. And I remember them saying to me, I remember actually one of the I keep recalling her a girl. She was 80-something years old when she told me the story. Jean Lloyd, who was then Jean Ogilvie, and her father was Lord Chamberlain to the Queen. And she told me this wonderful story about going to lunch at the embassy with old Joe and Kick right after Kick arrived. And she said her father's name was Joe, too. And so she and Kick would call it the lunch of the two Joes. And at the two Joes lunch, she said, oh, it's just wonderful. And I said, but how did your father, you know, get along with Joe Kennedy? Because Joe Kennedy talks like he just arrived from Hollywood and he had all this slang and, you know, and these things that an accent they couldn't understand. She said, my father loved it. He thought it was the funniest thing he'd ever heard in his entire life, and it was new and it was novel. But then, of course, what was also important was that at that point, they had the same political position, because when Joe arrived in 38, most of the aristocracy, a great part of the aristocracy, wanted to avoid war with Hitler at any cost, because they saw the danger as being the Russians coming. And so as a result, when Joe arrived, he was politically very popular. By the time he left, he was one of the most hated man next to Hitler in England. But at the beginning, it was wonderful for them. It was just, this is a great thing. We love it. It's a novelty. And for Rose, she would say later, it was the most wonderful time in her life. I mean, she suddenly was not left at home. She was suddenly giving dinner parties. She was suddenly going to the palace. She was going, for weekends with the Queen. And it was just. I remember one of the people who knew her then said that there was a fire at the Kennedys' house years later, and all of her autographed pictures of the Queen burned up, and she immediately started writing to England saying, can you get me duplicates of these? And they thought it was the strangest thing in the world. Why would this woman want it? But then when they thought about it, they said, oh, yes, it meant so much to her. So it started out as such a happy, 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 happy thing for everybody, but it became much more complicated, first of all, because Kick fell in love with a Protestant boy, and not just a Protestant boy, but Billy Hardington, who was then the Marquess of Hardington and the heir to the Devonshire Dukedom, which is one of the two greatest Protestant families in England, and play a family which played an enormous role in the religious history of England. And his family was horrified, and Kick's family was horrified. And these two young people were madly, madly, madly in love, and immediately there was tremendous, tremendous opposition. So it starts out all easily, and then becomes very quickly an incredibly complicated drama, both personally and historically.
I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf. We're chatting today with Barbara Leeming. Her new book, Kick Kennedy, The Charmed Life and Tragic Death of the Favorite Kennedy Daughter. You've made it clear that Kit Kennedy was no less interested in power than her siblings or her father, but what about her politics? Did she agree politically with her father, or were politics not part of her ambition?
Yeah, now that's again a complicated question, because one of the things that made everybody fall in love with Kick when she first got there, she walked into a world of boys who Andrew Devonshire, who was the 11th Duke of Devonshire, and who was indispensable for me for this book, and Andrew I adored, and everybody will fall in love with him. He's irresistible. But Andrew said to me when I was first talking about this to him, he said, what you have to remember about all of us, and Andrew was younger than anybody, he was younger than Kick. Andrew said, we were all boys who expected to die. He said, we were, 17, 18 years old, and we knew war was coming. He claimed that they knew from 1936, from the time of the Rhineland, they were expecting it, and they were certainly determined that they were going to go and fight, and they thought they would die. So there were, as Andrew said, entitled to be wild. Let's put it this way, they were wild, but they were kind of innocent wild boys. I always like Andrew's way of putting it. Andrew said, we were like country member bad boys, and they were country member bad boys, because there was a kind of innocence with girls, certainly, at that point in their lives, but they all drank too much, they all drove, they had incredibly expensive cars, and they were constantly crashing the cars, because they were racing back and forth between Oxford and Cambridge and the parties in London at a zillion miles an hour. But Andrew said there was a kind of intensity. And he said the other thing that was very interesting about it was, and Jean said the same thing, and so did Andrew's wife, Debo Devonshire, the Duchess, who for some of your listeners will know better as the last of the Mitford sisters. And Debo is the woman who eventually inherited Kick's life. And Debo not only helped me on this book, but Debo, who adored Jack Kennedy and became a great, great, great friend of his during the presidency, was wonderful on that book. And then when I did Winston Churchill in the last 10 years of his political life, Debo, there would be no book without Debo. She arranged every single interview for me. So she's just an astonishing person. She just died 2 years ago. And Debo said the same thing that Andrew said, that the girls were only thinking about parties and boyfriends. These are 18-year-old girls falling in love for the first time, and the war to them was unreal. You have this sort of collision between the boys thinking, well, we can do anything we want because we're going to be dead really soon, and the girls thinking, where am I going to get, am I going to get to go to Paris to get a new dress for the next party, or do I have to buy one in London? And, you know, so there's this complicated thing, but into this walks Kick, who has been Jack Kennedy's sidekick, and Jack, who is obsessed with English history and English politics and what's going on, has been talking nonstop about all the great political issues, and particularly since the rise of Hitler, that these boys are preoccupied with. They have girls who couldn't care less, and in walks Kick, and, oh, she's all excited to talk about whether they'll fight, whether the king and country debate, which was the great issue at Oxford at that point, whether the vote could be reversed. And they sort of couldn't believe this. She'll not only listen to political discussions, but she can talk. And she got there before Jack. So they had no way of knowing, you know, where does all of this come from? So as you said, yes, she had political interests. Once she had gotten involved with this group of people, and particularly once she fell in love with Billy Hardington, her father's politics and her own became completely opposed, because Joe Kennedy believed that no matter what, you did fight, and he didn't fight himself. And he kept saying, you know, these boys won't fight, and Kick kept saying to him, Daddy, honor and duty is what they live by, and they will do what they must do, even if it means dying. So you suddenly, you start to have this collision. I mean, I remember Orson said to me, when I'm talking to you, it makes me think about Orson. I remember Orson said to me, you know, you must immediately, if you're going for the drama, you've got to look for where the conflict is, the conflict within a character, the conflict between characters. I mean, this is, you know, how you get your story. This is how you figure it out. And I often laughed while I was doing this one, because I thought, you know, all those lessons that I wish I'd understood when he was alive, they all sort of paid off in the end. Certainly with Jack Kennedy. I mean, Jack Kennedy is a perfect Orson Welles hero, because Orson always said to me that the greatest character is the one who has conflict within himself. And Jack Kennedy was a completely divided character. On one hand, he wanted to be Winston Churchill. On the other hand, he wanted to be Joe Kennedy. And that doesn't work too well together, but it's a great drama. I don't know. It's a really incredibly dramatic story, and it's strange. Oh, I know. I can tell you something that's really an easy way to think about this. When I first, the first time that I went to Chatsworth, which is the golden palace of the Devonshire Dukes, it would have been Kick's house had she lived, and Billy had inherited the dukedom. It's probably the most beautiful of the great English country houses, as they call them. When you come in over the hillside, and there's this incredible moorland, and then you go into the rolling countryside. When you come in over the river, and you see the house first, and if you see it in sunlight, there's 18 karat gold around the frames of the windows, and so the sunlight catches the gold, and the stone is yellow, and the whole thing glitters. And imagine being an 18-year-old girl who arrives with your boyfriend, your first great love, and he tells you, this is where we're going to live one day. I mean, that's a pretty exciting thing for a young girl. And it is. It's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. And the first time I went there, Devonshire, the Duchess, gave me one of her scrapbooks from the Kick period to look at when I went upstairs to bed at night. And I was sitting there in this palace, and I'm in a very high bed with a scrapbook in my hands, and I start looking through it in this period of 1938 to 45, basically, and I'm thinking, this is the strangest scrapbook. All of the girls kept very, very big scrapbooks of their youth. And I'm looking at this thing, and I think, this is really strange. And as they turned the pages, it got stranger and stranger, because on one page, you'd see a photograph of them at a party, you know, a little girl who barely looked old enough to be in a long dress, and a boy who didn't look like he was quite ready to shave yet. And then on the next page, there'd be a marriage announcement. And then on the next page, there'd be an obituary for that boy, because he'd have been killed in the war. And it was, there were no transitions. There was just, it was, I mean, you could feel reading the scrapbook that this was a time of such intense, everything was speeded up. I mean, Gene Lloyd said to me that we were not young for very long, and it's true. What was so strange was all of these girls, including Kick, but it was even more on the part of the British girls. They, one minute, they're in the country with chaperones and no exposure to boys at all. Then they're brought down at the age of 18 to London for this marriage market where they're supposed to find a husband. And then suddenly there's a war, and the mothers all disappear, and the girls are left, and some of them are working in the middle of the thing, or they're married, and the boys are dying, and and suddenly you grow up, and you grow up overnight, and the boys grow up overnight. And so they become very complicated people. And Kick, I think, experienced very much the same thing, that it's so fast, and there's an incredible kind of intensity to it because of the war, and because it's a society that is in turmoil, because in a way this is like the last chapter of Downton Abbey, except it's real. It's the moment when the final chapter of the aristocracy losing their political power is taking place. And in 1945, when the war was won and Winston Churchill had just saved England and the world, suddenly he was thrown out of office, because once the war was over, British society was not going to go back to what it was before. The servants were not going back to the country houses. The aristocracy had finally, which had begun that process in the First World War, had finally lost its political power forever. And that complicated Kick's life in a tremendously difficult way, because she had staked everything on that future. And so not only did the husband who she finally married, Billy Hardington, after 6 years of struggle, die 4 months later at the front, but the aristocracy that was going to make her a duchess and make her the most influential person in England in her mind, that was falling apart too. So what should she do then? It's a really pivotal moment in history, but a pivotal moment in her personal story.
My guest is Barbara Leeming. Her new book, Kick Kennedy, The Charmed Life and Tragic Death of the Favorite Kennedy Daughter. I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf. Well, finding those focuses that Orson Welles and you were talking about is one of the things that makes your books so interesting, the way, you know, you used, say, abuse in the life of Rita Hayworth or the PTSD in the life of Jackie Kennedy. It seems that one of those focuses in Kick Kennedy is that moment in which she decides to marry, and therefore she is developing a conflict with her mother over religion.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when the war broke out in 1939, Kick and the rest of the children were sent home. Joe did not want them there with war. They were expecting bombing and whatever, and she didn't want to go home. She considered herself to be in love with Billy Hardington. They wanted to marry. Neither parent would let it, and she suddenly found herself back in the United States. And one of the things that's so interesting about her, and again, like Jack, she's unstoppable. Nothing stops this girl. There's no reason that she's going to possibly get back there, but she does. And it took her 6 years to get back, to get to Billy and get to the altar with Billy. But in 1943, she got back to England, and Billy still was in love with her. She was in love with him. But then they really did face this religious issue. What are they going to do? And Billy said that he could not marry her and raise his children as anything but Anglicans. He simply could not do that. And he was heartbroken asking Kick to do this, because he knew how much her religion meant to her, and I think understood that it was going to cause terrible problems with her parents. But he did ask her and said, you know, this is my duty. I'm going to be the Duke. I can't do this. And as Billy's sister Anne explained to me, Billy used to say something very simple. He would say, you know, one of the duties of the Duke is to appoint the clergy on your estates, the people who are the clergy these people have, at that point, I think they had 8 different estates. I mean, it's an extraordinarily wealthy family. And Billy said, if I've raised my children as Roman Catholics, how are they going to be appointing Protestant clergy? I can't do that. I mean, that's a simple way of understanding it. And Kick did understand it, and I think by then Kick was, there was no way she was going to give Billy up, and she came to terms in a very interesting way personally, I think, with that decision, because Kick, by 1944, when the decision had to be made, because Billy was going to go back to the front, either you marry me now or I'm going, and she had come to the point, I think, where the code of duty and honor, which was everything to Billy, had become a kind of substitute for the best of her religious beliefs. In her mind, she was not doing anything wrong religiously by marrying Billy. She felt that she was going to be still a Catholic in her, you know, in her mind. She might not be able to go to communion, but she had come to terms with it for herself. But when she had to tell her mother, it was disaster for her. And, I mean, you can see how horribly upset she is in her letters and her diaries and so forth. I mean, it's a really hard thing. And I remember Debo and Jean both saying to me, you know, how impossible this was for Kick to do this to Rose. And she did do it. And then what makes it so horrible, because her mother was furious, and her mother was just, I mean, really, to the very last moment, would not reconcile herself to the marriage. And then 4 months later, her husband is dead. And Kick's mother and Kick was home at that time when she got word that Billy had been killed, because Joe Jr. had been killed. Her brother had been killed in August, and Kick had immediately flown home to be with her parents. And there was a lot of tension in the house, apparently, between her and Rose. She felt somehow or other that her mother still didn't accept it. And then word came that Billy had been killed, and there was a sense that Rose was taking this as a kind of this is God's way of settling this, or his retribution. And that was really impossible for Kick to deal with. And she went immediately back to London to be with Billy's family, where, you know, she could mourn. But it was never resolved between the two of them. And then, of course, the story gets much worse, because Kick is only a young girl. She's going to have a life. And where is she going to go next? I mean, is she going to move back to America? Is she going to marry a Roman Catholic? I mean, all those questions then have to be dealt with for her, and between her and her mother. And they didn't resolve in a very good way.
The picture on the cover of your book, Kick Kennedy, The Charmed Life and Tragic Death of the Favorite Kennedy Daughter, Barbara Leeming, reveals that Kick Kennedy had the Kennedy facial features, but what about her voice? Did she have the distinctive Kennedy voice as well?
I've heard a little tiny snippet of it, and I've heard a million imitations of her voice. We call it the aristocratic cousinhood. You know, this is a world where cousins marry cousins, and they all talk alike. And they don't. They talk, half of them talk one way and half of them talk the other way. But they all have accents that are anything but like Kick's. And they like nothing better than to imitate Kick and the way, I mean, their imitations of a Boston accent is something to behold.
Well, it's really a book that completes a missing piece of the Kennedy saga. Kick Kennedy, The Charmed Life and Tragic Death of the Favorite Kennedy Daughter, and the author, my guest, Barbara Leeming. Barbara Leeming, thank you so much for being with us on From the Bookshelf.
Oh, it was wonderful, Gary. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, that's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and will come back and hear us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com, subscribe to our podcast at iTunes, and like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, the brilliant Barbara Leeming. Her new book, Kick Kennedy, The Charmed Life and Tragic Death of the favorite Kennedy daughter. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for listening.